Broadcasting live from Dublin, Ireland, and around the world on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com. You're listening to Ireland's premier mixed martial arts radio.
This is Mike Dolce,
Ian McCall,
James Little Evil Pulver,
the Crippler Chris Leaving,
Frank the Legend Shamrock,
Bruce Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Brawls.
Talking Brawls MMA Radio Live is back, just over 24 hours removed from UFC Hunt versus Nelson, UFC Fight Night in Japan. What a night it was. I'm your host as always, Niall McGrath. Alongside me as always, Fig O'Farrell from Stanta MMA. Fig, what's happening, brother?
Very good, thanks, Niall. You know, after the weekend we've had for Liverpool and United, couldn't think of anything worse than talking about anything but MMA right now, so let's get down to it.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, shocking weekend, shocking day of results for Manchester United fans and Liverpool fans worldwide. So yeah, big show lined up today. Obviously, we're going to be talking about UFC Fight Night Japan, where Mark Hunt knocked out Roy Nelson for the first time in his career. Absolutely stunning uppercut, which floored the big country, Roy Nelson. Awesome display from Mark Hunt, throwing his name definitely back in that title mix. Probably a fight with Andrei Arlovsky coming up. We'll talk about that in a few minutes' time. But also on the show today, Paul Felder is going to be joining us. He makes his UFC debut at UFC Fight Night Canada, Nova Scotia, I believe it is, against Jason Sago. So really looking forward to talking to Paul, the Irish Dragon. Okay, let's get things kicked off. After nearly dropping my microphone there, but I didn't. Let's get things kicked off. Obviously, a great night again in Japan, Fig, last night. It was a very decent card. I enjoyed it quite a lot. I was really impressed with Mark Hunt. His counter-striking as well looked really good. He caught Nelson a lot of times before ultimately sinking in that uppercut. Your assessment of Mark Hunt's performance was really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much, you know, some of the commentary during the week was saying, Roy Nelson has far superior grappling. I expect Nelson to try and take this to the mat. But, to be credit to Mark Hunt, Nelson did try and take it to the mat. Mark Hunt's takedown defense is at a level where guys like Roy Nelson, the wrestling game just isn't really going to trouble him, you know. So Mark Hunt was able to keep the fight where he wanted. And, Roy Nelson's susceptible to that uppercut. Mark Hunt landed and, another stunning walk-off knockout. It was just interesting to hear your take on it and all, whether or not you watched the fights live and what you make of the early start.
I didn't for the first time in a long time. I didn't watch the fight live. Actually, a few points on Friday night, but I was saying to one of the boys, get on board Mark Hunt by knockout. I just fancied Mark to do it by knockout. And I went 7-0 my picks on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com. So I think I'm actually top of the leaderboard there. So Keith and Ben and Joe, I'm on top. But my take on it was, I think it started, the main card started at 8 fig. So I just wasn't really, I just said I'll give this one a miss, wake up. I woke up about 11 o'clock and then watch it on 5 pass from there. But, Mark Hunt, what would you like to see Mark Hunt do next now? You know, that's a big win, obviously, coming off that performance, the draw against Antonio Bigfoot Silva, which is one of the fights of the decade, heavyweights fights of the decade. Obviously, before that, I lost to JDS. There's a lot of talk for Andrei Arlovsky. Is that a fight you'd like to possibly see? Two guys who you probably wouldn't have thought would have been in the UFC 5 years ago. It's pretty crazy that we're actually talking about this match for a top contenders fight as well.
I mean, the UFC heavyweight division is just absolutely batshit. You know what I mean? Like, just thinking back to maybe 3-4 years ago, that strike force, the heavyweight Grand Prix, and you know, you'd Andrei Arlovsky, who got knocked out in the first round, and Alistair Overeem, you know, was touted as the favourite. And if you were to tell me in 4 years' time that Overeem's career would be over and that Arlovsky, combined with Mark Hunt, you know, would be maybe one or two fights away from the UFC title shot, I'd have, you know, I don't think there's any MMA fan in the world who would have believed you had you said that to them. As for what I'd like to see Mark Hunt do next, unfortunately, you know, as sentimental as what I've just said is, it is somewhat disappointing that we've seen a lack of UFC new UFC heavyweights breakthrough, in my opinion. So, you know, we're just left with the old guard, and I don't see any fight better than Hunt Arlovsky at the minute. You know, two guys who are going to go out there, strike with each other. I think it's a fight Hunt would win quite comfortably. You know, obviously Arlovsky looks evolved, he looks regenerated, but I hate to harp on about his chin, but it's still yet to be tested in his return to the UFC, and I don't care who you are, I don't see you going through a fight with Mark Hunt without getting your chin tested.
Definitely the Hunt, he is definitely back in the hunt for that world title. And you know, with JDS, obviously he lost to JDS two fights back. JDS isn't getting a title shot anytime soon, so he sort of leapfrogs that position, because after the weekend especially, there's been a lot of fights made. I like the Josh Barnett fight possibly as well. Josh doesn't have a fight. That'd be a real old-school bangers fight as well. Really like to see that one. But a lot of the other guys are taking up. And speaking of potential heavyweights and light heavyweights were in the mix, what did you make of... obviously, there's going to be a lot of speculation and talking about Anthony Johnson. Anthony Johnson has been suspended by the UFC, and Thiago Silva has been cut again by the UFC, being signed, you know, back 2 weeks prior. It's pretty crazy stuff. I don't know if you saw the video today, Fig, that was released by MMA Weekly, showing Thiago Silva, talking with his wife. His wife got him on the video recorder, I believe it was a night or two before he was arrested. Apparently he was using cocaine as well. Pretty disappointing all round again, because, you know, we were so much looking forward to a potential Gustafsson versus Rumble Johnson fight as well, on top of seeing the return of Thiago Silva.
Yeah, I mean, credit to UFC. Obviously, these type of things are horrible to see, but, you know, with an organization that's self-regulated in the manner of the UFC is, you know, it's very easy, and perhaps we've seen it in the past, to, you know, there is a tolerance level. There are certain things, like the DUIs, they'll turn a blind eye to, but it's good to see that, you know, they do have, there is a level when they're going to step in and say, regardless of the star power, you know, Anthony Johnson, you know, had he beaten Gustafsson, he would have been a real... Anthony Johnson versus either Jones or Cormier is a fight that would have gotten a lot of people excited. I'm sure it would have sold big. And for the UFC to, you know, just step in and see the bigger picture, I think it's great to see. Yeah, obviously there's nothing I can say apart from, you know, how disappointed I am. But I'd just like to get your opinion, Niall, on who do you think will be next for Alexander Gustafsson? Just because, you know, it may not be till probably next summer. You could be looking at, you know, a very long layoff until, you know, his title fight. So I imagine he's going to stay busy. I don't see anyone in the division as dangerous a fight for him as Anthony Johnson, but I'd just like to see who you'd like to see him get in there with and mix it up with.
Looking at the UFC rankings here now in front of me, there's a few guys that I don't think Rashad Evans is a fight.
Yeah,
and maybe, you know, I don't know if Glover's taken up, but that's definitely an interesting fight for me. Something like that. He's not going to do the Phil Davis fight again. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him. But I like that one. I think Rashad Evans, if he's not taken up, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I don't think Rashad's had a fight announced for quite some time. That's definitely one I'd be interested in seeing. Maybe a dangerous one for Gustafsson, but one I'd definitely like to see all the same. Let's talk a little bit. Let's go back a little bit to the card at the weekend in Japan. It was a really, there was some really good fights. And a guy who really stood out for me, and another, this guy has to be a contender soon. We're talking about this, you know, before we got on air. Koji Horiguchi defeated John De Los Reyes, TKO in the first round, 3 minutes 48 seconds in the flyweight division. What a performance from this kid, man. I know he's coming off, I think it's his second or third fight in the UFC, and his third win. He's on a serious tear at the moment. Really good performances. He beat Daryl Montague and Dustin Poirier previously, and taking out John De Los Reyes. Surely you're looking at this guy taking on a top 10 opponent now for that performance. It was clinical, and it was vicious, in other words, as well, Fig.
Yeah, well, 10 out of 10 for your performance on the pronunciation. But, you know, obviously, Horiguchi, I was probably my favourite fight of the night. I was so impressed with him. I'm a demon for the flyweights. I love nothing more than seeing flyweights, two flyweights go at it, as Niall McGrath spills his beverage. But, yeah, you know, I just really, really enjoyed that scrap. I love flyweights. I love flyweights who can finish. I like, you know, the flyweights, the mold of the Neil Seary, John Lineker. And, you know, I know Horiguchi now is on a bit of a tear. And you, you think he should be looking at a top 10 opponent. I agree with you undoubtedly, but at the same time, after watching that performance, seeing how vicious he was on the feet, just how much he punished John Dallas Reyes, part of me was thinking, how good would a fight with Horiguchi and Neil Seary be?
Why not? I'd absolutely love to see that one. That would be an absolute cracker. Looking at Neil Seary, have you heard any inklings of a fight coming up, Fig?
No. I mean, it's strange, you know, obviously out of the six Irish guys that fought in UFC Dublin, he's the only one who isn't booked at the minute. Now, I've heard nothing specific, but from what I've heard was that he's expected to fight before the new year, but I haven't really heard. And, you know, I was even kind of looking myself at who he's going to kind of be matched up with and that kind of thing, but it's purely speculation at this stage. Who would you like to see him go in there with?
I don't know, but you'd have to be looking at someone top 10 for Neil at the moment after his, you know, he probably really should have. I know he said, I spoke to him after the fight and he was very disappointed that he didn't finish Phil Harris in that fight. So, you know, looking at the rankings and looking at the top, you're going to have to, because obviously he went very close against Brad Pickett. It only makes sense for the UFC. I'd like that Horiguchi fight. You know, possibly someone like Dustin Ortiz maybe as well. You know, Paddy's fighting Lewis Gadnoe in 2 weeks in Canada. And we'll be speaking obviously to Paul Felder in a couple of minutes' time, who's also on that card. I like that. One of those two fights, Dustin Ortiz or possibly Horiguchi. I think that'd be a really good stand-up fight if he was to go up against Kaicho Horiguchi, the Japanese kid. But no, he's definitely a kid to watch out for in the future of the flyweight division, an absolute top prospect.
Yeah, final thing on Horiguchi. If any of the listeners are big fans of Japanese MMA, and he's one of Horiguchi's trainers, but he was reminding me so much of Kid Yamamoto. I think I tweeted it. You know, he's Kid Yamamoto 2.0. Just his movement, his striking is absolutely excellent. So interesting to see. I know he's fought Daryl Montague, who has a pretty decent wrestling background, I believe. But, you know, if Horiguchi can, you know, spar and brawl and keep it on the feet, there's, you know, very few in the flyweight division who can put up with that type of stand-up, you know.
Definitely, completely agree. Any other fights? There was a couple of fights. I was quite disappointed with Alex Kuchera's performance against Masanori Kanahata. He didn't really seem to get going at all in the fight. The second round, he had his back. Basically, Kanahara was on his back from a standing position. He just seemed to, from what we've seen from Alex Kuchera's lately, him obviously being in the lab under John Crouch, I expected a better performance from what we've seen from lately. Obviously, the loss against Uriah Faber, but the two fights before that against, you know, Sergio Pettis, Roland Dan Horm, Hyung Ho Kiang, Tezuka, and Demasio Page. You know, he was basically on a five-fight win streak before Faber. I just think he sort of came down a little bit back to earth and didn't really improve on what we've seen from him in the last 2 to 3 fights. What's your opinion on Alex Kuchera? He's always an entertaining fighter to watch, if that's fair to say.
Yeah, being honest, I didn't see this full fight. My girlfriend was in work at 8 and I had to give her a lift. So,
Jesus, the girlfriend.
Yeah, I saw the first round and then it was time to go. And I kind of thought, oh, Caceres, you know, he looked a bit tentative. Obviously, in his last fight, he was dominated by Faber. The fight before that, he was losing pretty decisively to Sergio Pettis and he managed to stage the comeback. So, you know, with all due respect, I don't ever see Caceres as a world beater. But, you know, as I said, I saw the first fight, or the first round, excuse me, and I thought, oh, you know, kind of a bit more tentative than I'd seen Caceres before. He's probably going to, you know, he's always good for stamina, probably going to come out win the final two. I actually already dropped the first round myself, but then, you know, when I returned home to see he'd left it out there. I don't know if you'd call it maybe a gimme fight for Caceres. I think that might be a bit unfair on his opponent, but yeah, I definitely think that was a fight he would have targeted as one to get back in the win column and, you know, put himself back up in the bottom weight division.
Yeah, there was some other really interesting fights, and a couple of fights that really didn't stand out for me. I was very impressed with Miles Jury against Takanori Gomi. I thought Miles might have struggled in that fight, but what a performance it was from Miles Jury in solidifying himself as a contender now in the lightweight division. What did you make of that? Like, he is on an absolute tear now, Miles Jury. A former Ultimate Fighter, I believe. He was on the Ultimate Fighter 13. And the guy is just, you know, he's 15-0 now. He is seriously knocking on the door for that title shot, Fig.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, obviously 15-0, you really can't fault anyone 15-0. Great performance against Gomi, but at the same time, I don't know. I think, you know, he's ranked 9th at the minute. I'd like to see him. I don't think he's really been tested. You know, Diego Sanchez is kind of an ageing force, as with Takanori Gomi. The win against Michael Johnson and Ramsey Nijem probably shouldn't be discredited, but, you know, training out of Alliance MMA, got a great camp, you know, training with Michael Chandler, Norman Park, a host of the world's top lightweights over there. So, you know, it's interesting to see who he could fight. I think it's probably unfair to give him the loser of Alvarez Cerrone. The winner probably fancies an automatic title fight. But, you know, if for some reason, you know, Pettis Melendez gets postponed again, perhaps maybe the winners of those two fights could face off. But yeah, he's a bit of a dilemma now for matchmakers Joe Silva. Maybe is Bobby Green still without an opponent? Yeah. Maybe he could step in there with Bobby Green.
Bobby Green's called him out, I think, on Twitter this week as well. Bobby Green called out half the division on Twitter this week. You know, because I don't know why he called out half the division. Norman Park, he mentioned Miles Jury. There's some fascinating fights still to make in one of the most active divisions in the UFC, the lightweight division. It's absolutely crazy. So interesting to see what's next for Miles Jury. Definitely a kid with the world at his feet at the moment. Anyway, but yeah, no, he definitely has to go up someone in the upper echelon, and Bobby Green possibly could be a really good fight. And it's one that Bobby, you know, wants to take on board as well. So I'd like to see that one happen, Mr. O'Farrell. I think that'd be good. Guys, we'll be joined by Paul Felder, the Irish Dragon, who's making his debut at UFC Fight Night Nova Scotia in just under 2 weeks' time, which is going to be it's a really good card. I'm really looking forward to Safdie and McDonald and that as well, and seeing Paul's fight, obviously coming off in a crazy, crazily good performance against Craig Johnson in CFFC in the US, and it was a spinning back kick knockout, which was absolutely insane. So you can check that out on YouTube, I believe it's up there, and really do look out for that one. So we'll be talking with Paul in a few minutes' time. But just yeah, there was another fight in the card. What did you think of the return of Amir Sadala and Sexy Yanama himself, Yoshihiro Akiyama, obviously taking a decision victory against Amir Sadala?
Yeah, I mean, Sexy Yama, he's kind of a fighter at this stage. You know, he was on a skid. He probably needed a win to stay in the UFC or stay active. You know, 39 years of age, he's on a four fight losing streak. Arguably dropped his debut to Alan Belcher as well. So someone who's not really impressed in the UFC, you know. I tweeted out, I think the number's got off my head now, but I think the UFC has definitely held north of 100 events in between the time it took him to get his two victories inside the octagon. But, you know, at the same time, I was pretty impressed with his performance against Sadala. You know, Sadala's a fairly tough dude, you know. Akiyama out-grappled him, he outstruck him. Sadala's tough to put away. You know, Akiyama's a performer, you know, coming out to the song from Step Brothers, Time to Say Goodbye, every time, you know. I never, at 39 years of age, I never particularly see him challenging for a title. But, you know, he's a guy who can, even if he's just going to fight in the Japanese cards, he's going to put on fun fights, and he's someone I'd be excited to see fight again. And, you know, a decent gatekeeper for the welterweight division as well.
Definitely fig. Yeah, good things to look forward to ahead. Well, hopefully we'll see something a little better from Akiyama. I wasn't particularly impressed with his performance on Saturday night against Amir Sadala. I thought it was probably the most lackluster fight on the card, so to say. If you want to catch us on Twitter, you can hit us up. Obviously, you can catch us on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com, where I hope you're listening at the moment. There'll be a podcast of this show later on, so don't worry if you're listening to the podcast later on. That's perfectly acceptable as well. But you can catch Fig on Twitter. You've changed your Twitter handle, I believe, Fig.
Yeah, you know, Ferg the Iceberg just wasn't cutting it anymore. It was a bit, you know, kind of like a 12-year-old on MSN Messenger, so you can get me now at Ferg, OFMMA.
Yeah, there you have it. There you have it. You can catch me at Niall McGrath 4, obviously at tvmma.com and at Talking Brawls. Just before we get to the interview with Paul Feller, I want to ask you about Misha Tate against Rin Nakai. Rin Nakai, she's like 5'1". She looked way, you know, she's probably as wide as she is tall. Looks absolutely huge. Muscly girl. But in fairness, Misha looked pretty damn big herself. You know, obviously she's 5'8", I believe Misha is. Decent performance from Misha. You know, I think Sarah McMahon called her out last night. Good performance from Misha. How do you assess, you know, her performance and what do you think she should do next, Fig?
Yeah, I find it interesting that you said Akiyama was, you know, one of your least favourite fights on the card. I wasn't particularly impressed with the female fight. That being said, you know, it was a decent victory for Misha Tate. You know, she's now, you know, incredibly, after Beth Cahaya's victory last week, I found out that three fights in the women's bantamweight division is the second longest winning streak there is. So, you know, Misha Tate, she does have star power. Obviously, the division, you know, is based upon Ronda Rousey, always looking for a fight for Ronda, boosted by Holly Holm, potential fights with Gina Carano and Christine Cyborg. So, but at the same time, I would not be surprised, as one-sided as the fights have been so far, I would not be surprised to see Misha Tate versus Ronda Rousey for a third time. And I think Sarah McMahon would be a decent stepping stone towards there, because obviously, you know, Tate McMahon, they've both been in there with Rousey. They've both come out, you know, on the losing end pretty dominantly as well. And, you know, but at the same time, both of them fancy going in there again and mixing it back up. And what a better way to stake a claim for going back in there than to defeat another challenger for Ronda Rousey.
Definitely, yeah. I'd probably like to see her face Sarah McMahon or something first. I don't think the UFC are going to go with that fight just yet. I think they'll try and get Carano back in there and see what happens there first off. But it's going to be really interesting to see what does go down next from Misha Tate. You know, looked decent. It wasn't a great fight either, but some interesting times ahead. But Fig, you know, speaking of the card as a whole and the Japanese market, it seems the UFC are quite coy. They're not really committing more to the Japanese market. They're selling the same amount of events as they did last year. You know, what's going to boost the Japanese market, you know, in the coming year? Because obviously since Pride left, you know, Japan, there's been a lull in Japanese MMA. It's really, it hasn't kicked on the way the UFC probably presumed it was going to kick on, if that's fair to say.
Yeah, you know, I mean, admittedly, going back to the older days, not that I was never a fan of Japanese MMA, but I wouldn't have been one of the lads who was, you know, getting up early to look for a stream for, you know, promotions like Dream or their New Year's Eve show, you know, sitting down watching that for 18 hours at a time. But, you know, that being said, obviously second to the United States, it's probably the second biggest nation for MMA. So, yeah, you would like to see it develop at the same time. And, you know, obviously with the lack of stars of Japanese fighters, that could probably be their problem, and all they need is one major star and you could see the sport take off like it has done in this country.
Couldn't agree more, Fig. Good summing up there of what's going to happen for Japanese mixed martial arts in the coming year. Delighted to be joined on the line now by Paul Feller. Paul, how are you keeping, my friend? Great to have you on the show. Paul is not here.
Hey.
Oh, he is. Paul, how are you, my friend? Welcome to Talking Brawls MMA.com Live. How are you keeping, my man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
We're good. We're not too bad. Sunday evening here in Dublin. Not too bad. Paul, obviously great to have you on the show. You're going to be making your UFC debut in just under 2 weeks' time against Jason Sago at UFC Fight Night Nova Scotia. How excited are you about this fight and making your debut in the premier mixed martial arts organization in the world?
Oh, man, I can't really even really sum it up how excited I am. It's been kind of a bit of a roller coaster. You know, I fought Saturday night, Sunday found out that I had a fight in 8 weeks from the day of my last fight, and, you know, just kind of went right into training and kind of just going with the flow here, but I just can't wait to get over there and start experiencing what it's like to be there and representing the UFC, man. It's kind of obviously a dream come true.
Puff, Figo Farrell here. Obviously, I spoke to you, you know, for your last fight, just after you came off the victory against Mark Stevens, and you were angling to be on the UFC Dublin card at the time. First of all, how did it feel to kind of, you know, the disappointment of not getting the call for UFC Dublin, and, you know, then kind of coming up of the elation of finally getting the call up for this event here in Canada?
Well, you know, to be honest, you know, we really wanted to fight over in Dublin. We just thought that would be just ridiculous and fun and you know, super exciting. But I think getting one more fight with the organization, Cage Fury, that I was fighting with, and getting another knockout under my belt, really, I think it really made it obvious to my crew and my teammates and my manager and even Joe Silva that it was time to go. I think that maybe they thought that would have been a little premature if I, you know, fought on that card. And, you know, I still get to go to another country and fight. Not as cool as going to Ireland, obviously. My brother was actually just over in Ireland like a week ago and having a blast over there, so I'm a little jealous.
Has he sobered up yet since his return?
No, I don't think he has. He actually got, like, stuck in Galway, I think, and then he was with a whole group of guys, and he had to stay at some place and find somebody to call the group that he was with to get his wallet and his passport and everything back to him. But he had a blast while waiting for all that to happen. So
the last place you want to be hoping to get your wallet back is Galway, you know. Wouldn't trust the people there at all. But
he got it, though. He got it.
Good stuff. Obviously, you know, Paul, then while we're touching on the subject, I'd just like to ask, first of all, about your Irish heritage. But, you know, obviously it's great to hear, you know, hear you talking so fondly of a desire to fight in Ireland. So, you know, at the same time, you're not looking past Jason Sago. But perhaps if the UFC was to return to Ireland down the line, would it be obviously a destination you'd seek out to get a spot on the card?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you got to realize, and I know, obviously, when we talked before, I'm from South Philly and, you know, in Pennsylvania, in the United States, and wasn't born in Ireland. My parents weren't born in Ireland, but we grew up in a real small Catholic neighborhood. And, you know, the way we look at things here, you're either Italian, Irish, you know, in the neighborhood that I grew up with. And, you know, for my family for me to go over there would be just, I mean, I could probably get as many people to go over there pretty much as some of my fights in Atlantic City, to be honest with you, because everybody's just so supportive of that and being Irish Americans and all that kind of stuff. That if they would go, if the UFC goes back over to Ireland, no matter where it's at, I'll definitely be pushing to get on that card for sure, 100%, because that would just be a great trip for me to take and to go and fight in that country with you guys. And, you know, the fans over there are really starting to pick up with MMA. It's getting huge. So it would just be a blast, man.
Yeah. We've been told we're going to get a stage.
Hopefully Conor McGregor will be on that card too. Cause, you know, I'm becoming a huge fan of his too. I can't wait to see him fight next week.
Yeah. Well, I'm heading over to it. This is Niall here, onto you. I'm heading over to Vegas next week. So, looking forward to covering that over there. But, yeah, we're promised a stadium show. Apparently that's going to happen next year, so it'd be great to have you on that, Paul. Paul, just talk to me a little bit about, obviously, your last fight against Craig Johnson. You had a spectacular knockout victory. Talk to me about that performance, and it was a really, you know, incredible spinning back kick that you implemented and ultimately got the victory.
Yeah, I mean, we knew he was a, you know, a big-time college wrestler, and we knew he wasn't going to be too sharp on his feet, and from every fight that I saw, he just kind of grinds guys out, and we knew that I was going to be able to stuff a lot of his takedowns. I mean, we work takedown defense every single day at my gym because, you know, everybody kind of knows that I'm a striker and I'm a kickboxer and I'm going to try to stand and throw down. So we were completely ready for that. And I just saw him. He kept circling to my left, which is the right thing to do, which is funny because
he's circling away from my power side. But what people don't realize with me is there is no right way to circle, because if you circle to my left, my jab side, I'm going to hit you with a spinning kick. If you circle to my right side, I'm going to hit you with my right kick, the round, you know, my roundhouse to the leg or upstairs, and or the right hand. So my corner was just screaming that he's circling and to throw the spinning kick, and they wanted to spin, you know, the straight spinning back kick, but I had been working on my hook kick, and boom, it just caught him right on the chin.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, if anyone hasn't seen the knockout, or you know, the whole fight was kind of a striking clinic. But prior to the victory over Craig Johnson, you know, your march up the CFFC lightweight division and winning the belt, you became a bit of a tough slayer with good victories over, you know, Julian Lane, who was became famous for Let Me Bang Bro, and of course,
yes.
Mark Stevens, who I believe was on The Ultimate Fighter with GSP and Kostchek.
Yeah, he was.
So just to ask you, you know, obviously the CFFC is a well-renowned organization, has sent guys to the UFC like Zach Mikowski, Aljamain Sterling, George Sullivan. Was tough ever really an option for you, or did you feel fighting for an organization like the CFFC, you were bound to be noticed?
Before I started getting a bit of a win streak going, when the title got brought up for the first time, I think was when I really didn't worry so much about getting on Tough, because I'd seen Aljamain go, I'd seen George Sullivan going. I mean, Zach Mikowski never even got to really fight for that title, but he was actually slated to fight for the 125-pound belt, and then I think RFA picked him up for a big fight. They're another organization that guys kind of, you win a few big fights with them, and UFC's looking right at you. So right around when I fought for the belt, when they offered me Mark Stevens, I figured if I could beat him and defend it, that we were going to be kind of right on the line to get in there. But it was early on. It was something I kept asking about. I kept asking my old manager and then my new manager, like, what, you know, how can I get on the show? And we didn't just, I think timing was an issue, getting out there to Vegas and stuff like that to do the tryouts. And, you know, but I'm kind of glad I didn't have to be honest. I mean, I know it kind of propels you to stardom right away, but I'd rather just work my way up and fight some tough fights and get noticed that way, and maybe get some knockout bonuses if possible. And not have to live in that house for 8 weeks.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised by your answer, given that you're also an actor away from the cage. So I thought you would have loved to, you know, showcase some of your acting in the Tough House.
You know, man, I've been waiting, and my poor mother keeps telling me, are you going to tell them that you're an actor and this and that? And I've always been kind of real quiet about it for obvious reasons. You know, people are going to bust me about it and get on my case. But yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of people know that I went to a university for acting. I mean, that was my first passion, was to get into TV and television and films and stuff like that. And I actually did pretty well here in Philadelphia, and had some auditions in New York for commercials and like Applebee's commercials and stuff like that, and almost had a commercial agent. You know, life could have been completely different for me right now than fighting for the UFC. But I'm hoping to use that as a gateway when all is said and done, and hopefully, you know, make a run in the UFC and try to get to the top. And then when it's all done and I'm beat to death, I'll just try to make some money in television.
And Paul, how do you juggle the two together? I know you've done a few plays as well. You know, when you were fighting and when you were acting, how did you fit everything in, basically?
Man, it was tough, to be honest with you, because when I first started fighting for real, I mean, I'd always done martial arts since I was a little kid, but when I started really doing MMA kind of full-time, every now and then I would book a job where it was a well-paying acting job, and I'd go and do it and have to stop training for like a month and then come back into training. And it kind of was just, I wasn't getting as many fights as I should. And eventually, I think after my third, maybe my fourth pro fight, I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm not going to accept any more auditions or anything like that. And I kind of told everybody, you know, all my actor friends and people in the community here that know that I fight now, obviously, they don't even call me anymore, because they see, you know, I'm fighting every other couple months, and obviously when I just got signed, I think people realize I can't take 2 months off to go do some play on Broad Street in Philly when I can be fighting for serious, you know, money and moving up the ladder in the UFC.
Definitely.
So it's done for a little while. It's definitely on the back burner for a while right now.
Cool. And just something that intrigued me, your nickname as well. Where did that come from? The Irish Dragon, Paul Felder.
First of all, I'm aware for you Irish guys that apparently there's a gay club over there that's the Dragon or something like that. Somebody tell me.
Figured no more about that than me.
First off, I was training at a karate school when I first started doing amateur MMA, and this guy did this interview with me. And you know, I'm from a part in South Philly where it's, you know, a real Irish neighborhood, and he knew that, and he knew I did traditional martial arts and Japanese martial arts, so he just kind of threw the two together when he made up a nickname out of nowhere. And in this one YouTube video, he just calls me, I'm here with Paul the Irish Dragon Felder, which I didn't even know he was going to call me at the time, and that was not my nickname. I did not go by that. I didn't tell any fight announcers that that's my nickname. And one time that Cage Fury, and they just decided that they were going to take that as my nickname, and ever since it just stuck. Like I did not make up that nickname on my own, that is for sure.
It's unique to say the least, anyway, mate. But just speaking about your team, you're with Henzo Gracie team in Philadelphia. I believe you've trained with Donald Cerrone as well before, and fighters like that. But speaking of your team, Henzo Gracie team, you know, what's it like training there, and what sort of level guys have you gotten there?
We have obviously we have Daniel Gracie as our head coach, who's just unreal to work with. Man, he's been there, he's fought in Pride, you know, been training with Henzo his whole life, and all those studs that he grew up with over in Brazil. So just the amount of knowledge that he carries into the gym every day, and he's just a world class guy on top of it, and he pushes us to the limit and teaches us at the same time. And I've got Jonathan Webb in there, who's fighting Lyman Good November 1st for the Cage Fury welterweight title. Jordan Steiner comes down and trains with us. He's another local 55er who's part of our team from another spot out in Pennsylvania. You know, my boy Sean Brady, we just got a bunch of guys there. Mike Wilcox, like all these guys are stud CFFC fighters, are on their way to, you know, to the UFC. And I went out to the ranch and brought Jonathan Webb with me, and we just lived and trained with Cowboy for 3 weeks. I was actually just watching the Ultimate Insider on TV, and me and him are all over it, sitting there training with Cowboy. It was pretty cool.
Awesome. Is he as crazy as they say he is?
He is, man. They're taking all of the craziest things that he says and blending them all together and making him look like he doesn't, you know, kind of seem to care about this fight. But there's one thing that he cares about, and it's kicking his ass, believe me.
Yeah.
He might say, I don't know what he looks like. I haven't watched any footage, and I saw Eddie saying, oh, that's not true. He's just how he gets through the day. Well, that's not true. He doesn't know what he looks like.
Yeah.
He doesn't Google people. He doesn't YouTube you. He wakes up, feeds the animals, does his ranch life stuff, and we trains his ass off. And he's definitely going in there not unprepared. He's going in there to kick ass, like he always does.
It's going to be an absolutely fascinating fight. Obviously, being from Philadelphia as well, I believe Eddie Alvarez is from Philadelphia. You've had Eddie here on the show before. Have you ever crossed paths with Eddie?
No, man, I haven't. I've seen him, you know, in person and run into him at events and stuff like that. But as for training, we've always kind of been on different paths. You know, I started getting a little more serious about it in Philly right when he was kind of going to Florida. And then when he's back in town, he trains at a couple different schools that I don't really go and train. But I've got really close friends that have trained with him and speak nothing but praise about him. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about anything I've heard about Eddie, and I know he's tough as nails, and he's, you know, definitely one of the best in the world at 155, and I can't wait to see that fight next week. It's going to be I think it's going to be insane.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute bomber. Talking Brawls MMA.com here live with Paul Felder. He makes his UFC debut in 2 weeks' time against Jason Sago. Paul, just another question, right? We were looking at your record earlier on, and you know you're a guy who's you've stopped everyone bar two by TKO. When are we going to see some of that the Gracie submission techniques used in a fight? Will that be the fight against Jason Sago?
Hey man, you know you might have to see it on October 4th, because obviously you guys have probably done some of your research. You know Jason's a bit of a submission guy. He's got like yeah. 8 or 9 submissions out of his 10 wins or something like that. He's slick, and we've been working a ton on the ground, obviously. I mean, you know, for all the TKOs and stuff I have, especially now, I mean, I work with a kickboxing coach off on the side, and obviously I work some stuff with Daniel and my team and we spar, but I mean, the majority of my training is wrestling and jiu-jitsu. I mean, I do jiu-jitsu every single day. I mean, I'm on the mat rolling hard and getting shark tanked in bad positions, people on my back, people holding me in side control, turtle position against the fence, getting beat up. So there's really nowhere that I'm going to hit in this fight that I don't feel comfortable and haven't been before. And I would love to get a submission. I almost choked out Stevens. And as for Craig Johnson, I mean, he took me down once. I elbowed him like 3 times, and I went out. If you guys watch that fight, I tried to roll for an armbar there, and he got right out. So he didn't want to be down there, I don't think, for too long to show off any jiu-jitsu.
Now, Paul, you touched on it there, you know, mentioning Jason Sago has a well-versed submission game. You know, have you seen much of Sago barred his one fight in the UFC, which didn't go past the first, and against Josh Shockley, you know, have you seen much of your opponent aside from that? And obviously, are you as comfortable on the ground as you are on the feet?
I mean, no. I mean, I'm not gonna BS you guys. I mean, I obviously want to keep fights standing or with me on top, punching guys in the face as long as possible. I mean, it's just, where I'm comfortable, it's where I have fun. You know, I really, it's not a lie. I enjoy, you can ask anybody that spars me, and I have fun getting into exchanges and getting hit and answering back and getting pissed off at people. That's the fun part of the sport for me. But I feel comfortable on the ground. I just, of course, I'd rather keep it on the feet. And we've seen a couple other of his fights, you know, searching through YouTube. A lot of my teammates watch more of it than I do. I kind of take a look at him. I watch his UFC fight. I find out what he's about. And then from there, I kind of let my coaching staff do the rest. I'm not one of those guys that sits and like obsesses over footage and watches Jason and follows him on Twitter and what's eating for breakfast and what did he say about me? Because that mentally messes me up. I do my thing. I train my ass off. And I prepare for what he does best. And then, you know, I try to, you know, enforce what I do best. That's it.
Exactly. And obviously, you know, we're 2 weeks away from fight night. You know, what has the training been like? Has everything gone to plan? Is it about, you know, sort of winding down now and getting the weight on point? Or do you still stay in, you know, full mode for another week?
Yeah, we're, I just did a nice hard workout today. The weight is really good. Since I didn't really have much time off between that fight with Craig Johnson and this fight, it was pretty much 4 days I gave myself to go out with my friends and go eat some cheeseburgers and stuff like that. But other than that, it was kind of right back into camp. And that Sunday I was off to Albuquerque. So it's been kind of not enough time for me to get fat like I usually do in between some of these fights. So we'll go pretty hard this week and really focus on 3 rounds of everything, you know, kind of toning it all down to a 15-minute fight, you know, and sharpen it up and really hit heavy on the tie pads and just blasting the cardio. And then I leave Tuesday for Halifax next Tuesday.
And were you down in Albuquerque with Cowboy in preparation?
Yeah, we were there for 3 weeks with him and working out with him every day. I mean, he was my main training partner out there and vice versa. So, I mean, you know, you want to talk about a guy that's good on the ground, off his back, and taking your back. just the things that I think Jason are good at. I was working with number five in the world.
Paul, if I could just ask you how exactly the that situation arose, you know, the relationship between yourself and Cowboy. Obviously, he's distanced himself a small bit from Jackson's MMA in recent times and kind of preferred to run his own camp. But how did he contact you and, you know, say, oh, you look like a guy who would suit his sparring style?
Yeah, he did a seminar here in Philly about 3 years ago or so, and a friend of mine paid for me to go to it. She's like, you got to meet Cowboy. I know he's one of your favorite fighters, and at the time he was, you know, killing it in the WEC. So I went to the, long story short, I went to the seminar. He kind of saw me and my one friend doing his drills. We got talking. I hit up his manager about how I can get out there and train with those guys, and they were running the kind of Tap Out Ranch at the time, where you kind of rent a room and live with them. And I did that, and from there, I obviously got to spar with him. He saw my style, and another one of his fights came up. I think it was the rematch with Jamie Varner, and he paid for me to come out and train with him, and then he paid for me to come out again and a couple more times. And then just recently, you know, I hit him up and said, you know, we hadn't trained in a couple of years, and I had gone and won all these pro fights, and I was still an amateur back then when I was training with him. And I was like, dude, I've, you know, I'm won this belt, I'm getting close. We were trying to figure out how to train, and once I told him I got into the UFC, he was like, all right, that's it. You know, I'm bringing you out.
Awesome.
And he brought me out, and yeah, it's definitely my sparring style. You know, he gets a lot of guys, I think, that know who he is and are afraid of being in there with him, and unfortunately, that's not how I am, and I just kind of stand right in front of him and try to give it right back to him the whole time.
Good stuff. It must be, you know, extra beneficial as well, the fact that he's a fight coming up, you know, next Saturday at UFC 178. The intensity levels must be high, and the preparation obviously, you know, becomes more intense and ultimately better in leading you up into fight week as well.
Yeah, it was perfect, man, because, I mean, I literally fight the following week. So when we're out there, I mean, we're kind of, you know, it's not like, oh, well, I'm 8 weeks out and you're 2 weeks out. So if I hurt you or, you know, or I'm just more worried about my weight. It was kind of just, no, it's the same thing. We both had the same amount of time minus 1 week. So everything we did together. He had me doing all his strength and conditioning every day with him. We were sparring together every day. We were working with his wrestling coaches, his Thai coaches. I was just there. Everything he did, I was there with him, you know, tit for tat and pushing him. And just, I mean, that was my only job was, you know, was get ready with him and stay on point and train our butts off and have fun while we're doing it.
Paul, obviously we wish you the very best of luck in 2 weeks' time when you head out there to Canada. Obviously you can take a bit of solace in the fact that you won't be the only ginger on the card. We've our own Paddy Houlihan fighting that night as well. So you know, it'd be great to see.
But I don't like to be the only ginger out there, man. It's a lonely world.
Exactly. So if we could just get a prediction from you before we let you go, Paul.
For my fight? I'm going to say that I'm going to go balls to the walls on this guy, and that Dana White and Joe Silva won't be disappointed that they signed me to the UFC.
Definitely, we can't wait for Paul. And
you guys know how I am. I'm not going to sit here and then, you know,
bullshit.
Make up all second round this or that. Who knows? But it'll end with me getting my hand raised.
Excellent. We can't wait for it. That takes place at UFC Fight Night Nova Scotia next Saturday week. Really looking forward to it. And the guys can hit you up on Twitter. I think it's at Felder Paul as well if they want to check out what you're up to and follow you on social media. Paul, it's been a real pleasure to have you on, and look forward to seeing you over here in Dublin next year for the UFC card.
You know what? No matter what, if I'm on that card or not on that card, I'm coming over, and we'll all have to get together and have a good time over there.
Definitely, man. We'll have a few beers, no doubt about it. Do appreciate the time, Paul, and best of luck on Saturday week.
Thank you guys so much.
That was Paul Felder. Big thanks to Paul for joining us on the show here tonight. If you're listening live or on the podcast later on, obviously you want to get in contact with us and Talking Brawls. You can obviously find us on the website, talkingbrawlsmma.com. Figs on Twitter at his new handle. I think it's at, what is it, Fergus?
Fergo
F MMA. Why did you go changing it, man? You're just trying to spanner in the works there, like.
Yeah.
Actually, we leave it at that. But big thanks to Paul. Really interesting stuff there from Paul Feller, top man. Looking forward to his fight, obviously, on Saturday week. Big, massive week coming up. We have about, how many minutes have we left there, Fig, on the show?
10 minutes
left in the show. So, yeah, we're going to give it a little bit. I don't know whether I'm going to be back with a podcast, the regular Talking Brawls MMA.com podcast this week before I head out to Las Vegas. So I think we should talk a little bit about the fights now. Fig, what a massive card. As we mentioned there to Paul Feller, obviously he's trained with Cowboy, which is fascinating as well. That's going to be a really, really good fight. It's one of the fights I'm probably most looking forward to on this card, Cowboy Cerrone versus Eddie Alvarez. Eddie obviously making his debut in the UFC, which is it just has barn burner written all over it. And obviously we've our own Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier, which is another absolutely insanely good fight. This card is absolutely stacked, Fig.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you're expecting in 10 minutes talking about this card, you know. You
could go on all year.
Exactly, you know, just literally, you know, we could spend 3 hours talking about before it even reached the main card, just on the prelims. But, you know, there's just so many fights and obviously, you know, so many Irish going to be over there. It's great to have the Irish interest. You know, it's not only a huge night for MMA, it's also, you know, it's a real feel-good factor that it's a huge night for Irish MMA and Irish MMA is involved in big fights, you know. And but even if you took Conor McGregor out of the equation, it's just packed with absolute wars, you know, and just, you know, the highest level of martial art. And I can't remember seeing a card like it for quite some time.
Definitely, you know, top to bottom, we're looking at, we have John Howard against Brian Ebersole. We Patrick Cote, who we spoke on at the Talking Brawls MMA.com podcast a few weeks back, against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, which is going to be an absolute barn burner. Jorge Masvidal versus James Krause, another good friend of the show, James Krause. We've had James on the show many a time. And the return of Dominic Cruz, the former UFC bantamweight champion, is back in the octagon for the first time in over 2.5 years. It's going to be amazing to see what Dom brings back. You know, a guy who's had so much trouble with injury. A guy who's, you know, he looked unbeatable at one stage nearly in the UFC, you know, took out Faber. You know, he's beaten everyone back in the WEC days as well. You know, with some crazy fights, you know, Ian McCall, Joe Benavidez. He's beaten everyone that is somebody in that division. It's just going to be, it's an intriguing battle against a rejuvenated Takeya Mizugizaki, a guy who's, you know, coming off 5 straight wins in the UFC since his return. Obviously, most knows recently against Francisco Rivero, you know, beating Nam Phan, Eric Perez. This is a really dangerous one for Dom on his return to the octagon, Fig.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you know, just looking there, Dominic Cruz hasn't lost a fight since 2007. Obviously, he's been out for the last 2.5 years, but, like, Dominic Cruz was right up there at the top of the pound-for-pound list before his injury. 2.5 years, a very, very long time in MMA, and yet he could have gotten a much easier fight. You know, obviously, you know, for a long time there was talk that he'd be going straight back in there against Henan Barrow, and people saying, oh, you know, people expected Barrow to go through him like a freight train, saying Dominic Cruz was in desperate need of a tune-up fight. Well, he's been given a tune-up fight now, and to be honest, it's, if not as difficult, more difficult than the Henan Barrow fight. You know, a really, really tough task facing Dominic Cruz. So I think if he wins, he's got to be looking at a title shot, you know, to kind of reclaim the belt, which he never actually was defeated, but, you know, just through injury, got passed on.
Definitely. Things have gone quite smoothly tonight compared to last week. We had a little blackout spell last week. 2 weeks ago when we did the show. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think it was. I know you were away the last couple of weeks is why you haven't done the show, but this is going to become a more regular thing. But no, everything's gone smoothly enough tonight, Fig, isn't it? It's been strange, bar my spillage and my Coke can.
You spill on the Coke, but yeah, it's been swimmingly aside from that, apart from
That little incident, but it's been good. But yeah, and also another person returning, I want to mention before we wrap up here in about 4 or 5 minutes' time, Kat Zingano. You know, it's been another, a really sort of, you can't even put into words how much of a bad 2 years this girl has really had. I think it's a year and a half. She's obviously, you know, tore her knee, supposed to be on The Ultimate Fighter, which is a huge, it's a life-changing experience for anyone, you know. Marketability goes up tenfold, you know, the chance to fight for the world title. which was obviously taken away for her when she ruptured her cruciate knee ligament, and then obviously the passing of her husband and her head BJJ coach Maurizio Zingano, who obviously took his own life, you know, very, very sad circumstances. So it's great, really. It really is good to see such a talented lady back in the octagon. Someone I always enjoy, you know, fighting. That fight against Misha Tate, possibly an illegal knee in there, but you know, that's for another day. She got the rub of the green that occasion, but a really exciting fighter to have back in action in the UFC.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, you know, there we were just talking about UFC Japan and talking about how far away Misha Tate may be from a title shot. We're talking about a girl who absolutely annihilated Misha Tate not too long ago in her last fight. But, you know, obviously since then she's had some tragic circumstances. You know, a lot of people may, you know, a lot of casual fans may not be too familiar with Zingano, but wow, like she was an absolute beast and, you know, arguably the biggest threat to Ronda Rousey's title.
Yeah, definitely 100%. Obviously she's, you know, notable wins. And probably Invicta FC3 against Raquel Pennington, and when she choked her out in the second round of that bout, that was back in October 2012. So she obviously hasn't. She's had one fight a year for the last 3 years. So it's going to be interesting to say the least. But really looking forward to that fight against Amanda Nunes. It's going to be a barn burner. It's just stacked from top to bottom. But you know, before we wrap up, obviously with the flyweight title on the line, hopefully I'll be back on the podcast. I'm not sure. Sure, stay close to me on Twitter at NileMcGrath4 and on Talking Brawls and at TBAMMA.com and at FigOFarMMA. Just look it up, you'll find it anyway. Just in for so far, you'll see a handsome ginger chap photo there. So, no, it's listen, stacks top to bottom. Just a word, Poirier, Conor McGregor. A lot of people are, you know, dismissing Dustin Poirier. I personally think Conor's going to get the victory. I think everything Conor has said is true about Dustin. He does have a little bit of a rocky chin. You know, this is a really, really exciting fight. It's Conor's biggest test to date. How can you see this fight going, Fig?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's Conor's biggest test to date, but at the same time, just personally, it's almost kind of the fight where I'm most confident Conor's going to get the victory. You know what I mean? Like, I think everything he said about Poirier's chin, you know, I agree with Akira Korasani, you know, had him threatened with a jab. Yeah, you know, Brandao. And also another thing, which isn't talked about very much at all, obviously Poirier is a dangerous striker, but, you know, in the Brandao fight, in the Brimage fight, McGregor has taken shots and just walked through them, you know. A lot of people don't comment on McGregor's chin because they don't think he's been punched, but just the ferocity and the aggression in which Conor McGregor attacks, I just think he's going to steamroll Dustin Poirier. And just want to ask you, Noel, obviously, you know, you might be doing the other podcast, so I don't want to, you know, just get a small bit inside your head and feel, do you think an impressive win is enough for a Conor McGregor title shot?
Yeah, I was in the conference call on Friday night, Fig, and, you know, he's been told he's going to be brought over to Brazil for Mendes Aldo, and that says to me, you know, if he wins and wins impressively, I think regardless now at this stage, after that announcement, I think they're going to walk him in the octagon after that fight and say this fight is happening wherever it's going to happen. Obviously, there's rumours of Dublin, but it's the rain here. It's, you never know what would happen, whether they'd be able to do it outdoor. But yeah, I really do truly believe that Conor's on the cusp of a title shot, especially after that announcement. That's what's confirmed in my mind. I think he will win impressively this Saturday. I can't see this going outside the second round. TKO victory for Mr. McGregor. Obviously, just before we wrap up here, we have a minute left. It's going to be a burning card, so you can catch it obviously on BT Sport. And I think, I'm not sure what TV3's arrangement is. I think it could be a highlight show. I'm not 100% sure yet what it is.
BT Sport is part of the Satanta Sports package. Yeah, I believe TV3 are showing the... I'm not sure if it's just McGregor's fight, but it will be the full McGregor fight with possibly the full card on 29th, which would make it Monday evening, and also a countdown show as well. Yeah, so available on both platforms, but obviously catch it live on BT Sports.
Okay, just before we get out of here, obviously we are going to, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, what's coming in the next 4 weeks. We have 10 seconds left. A minute left. So just going to really look forward to the fight card next weekend. So stay close and talking brawls MMA.com and obviously on Ferg's Twitter account.
FergoFMMA.
I'm at Niall McGrath for, and obviously at Talking Brawls as well. So absolutely buzzing for next weekend. So check it out, guys. And thanks a million to Paul Feather for coming on the show with us live tonight. Thanks again to you guys for listening, either live or on the podcast, which will be up now if you're probably listening to it. So it's from Fergus O'Farrell and Niall McGrath. Good luck and good night. Thanks a million.